What does Franz Kafka have in common with the Orkney Islands off the north coast of Scotland? To find the answer, a good place to start is at the busy British Council offices, just a couple of streets down from Czech Radio's headquarters.
We're here at the British Council in Prague. I'm Nigel Bellingham, the director of the British Council. What you can hear in the background are children who are coming and going from their language classes. One of my most famous predecessors is Edwin Muir, who was director here between 1945 and 1948. Last year, the British Council celebrated its 75th anniversary, so he was one of our earliest directors.
Yes, what links Orkney to Prague is Edwin Muir, who was born in 1887 and grew up on the tiny island of Wyre. He's one of Scotland's best-known 20th century poets. But you may also know Edwin Muir and his wife Willa in connection with Franz Kafka. They translated many of his works into English and did much to establish his reputation in the English-speaking world. What is less well known about Edwin Muir is that he spent several years in Prague, first coming to the city in the 1920s and then again after World War II, when, as Nigel Bellingham has just told us, he spent 3 years as director of the British Council here.
My name is Clarice Cloutier, and I teach here in Prague at Charles University and at New York University, their Prague branch, and I teach classes in Central European literature and culture.
Clarice Cloutier has written about Edwin Muir's link to the city, which, she tells me, is a good deal more than skin deep.
He had come to Prague originally during a stay in different parts of Europe. He had also lived in Dresden and Rome, and he eventually came here in 1921 and stayed till 23.
And this was just after the foundation of Czechoslovakia, so it must have been a very exciting, dynamic time in Prague.
Certainly for him it was, and culturally very, very interesting. And he remembered that. That made a large impression on him. So he was a natural candidate to be sent back to work here at the British Council between 46 and 49 until the communist takeover.
And while he was here, he actually did write some poems which were connected with Prague or inspired by his stay in Prague, weren't they?
Yes, there were two poems that he wrote with specific mentions of Prague. Perhaps other poems also have references, but there was one that was called Autumn in Prague, which he wrote in 1925, and then a second one that he wrote after he had left, and that was written in 1956.
Maybe if you could read us, given that it's a short poem, the whole of Autumn in Prague.
Autumn in Prague. The ripe fruit rests here, on the chill ground, in the sterile air. All meanings have fallen into your lap, uncomprehending earth. The stubble shines in the dry field, gilded by the pale sun. The trees, unburdened with light limbs, shiver in the cold light. In the meadow, the goatherd, a young girl, sits with bent head, blind, covered head, bowed to the earth like a tree, dreaming a long-held dream. The gossamers forge their cables between the grasses, secure. So still the blue air hangs at sea, that great sea, so still. The earth, like a god, far withdrawn, lies asleep.
So that's the poem Autumn in Prague, which Edwin Muir wrote after his first stay in Prague in 1925. The first thing that strikes me about it is that it, although it's called Autumn in Prague, it doesn't seem like an urban poem at all.
Yes, in fact, Edwin Muir had problems with urban environments, given his original move from the Orkney Islands to Glasgow.
Maybe we should go into a little bit more detail about this, because he had the most extraordinary childhood, didn't he?
Mm-hmm. He grew up in a place that he ended up terming Eden, some sort of a paradise for him.
And just to clarify, I mean, it was a tiny island in the Orkneys where there were really just four or five farmhouses and nothing else.
Right. So that environment was an entirely stark contrast to what he then lived in Glasgow, and that kind of split in his life followed him. He never felt comfortable anymore with an urban environment, and so for him, everything needed to be a return to the countryside out of a city. And we see that perfectly exemplified in this poem as well. This is a trip to the outskirts of Prague.
It's a poem that is, in a sense, as you say, rural, but he was part of a modern circle. I mean, he ended up becoming friends with T.S. Eliot, didn't he? He ended up translating Franz Kafka from German into English. He isn't a rustic poet by any means, is he?
No, he's not, but I think that part of the Czech culture for a long time has been a return to nature. And if we also look at the other people with whom he might have met, at that time there were people writing the urban poetry, but then there was a second set of people who were talking about this very return to nature, and he might well have been influenced by them.
To many people, Edwin Muir is actually better known as a translator than as a poet, and he was, for example, the first and one of the best translators of Franz Kafka, of course, another Prague writer who really did introduce Kafka to English-speaking readers. How did that come about?
That came about because he had married his wife, Willa, and it turns out that they had very similar translation interests. And having spent a lot of time here, including some time earlier there in the 20s, he had been fascinated by Kafka's understanding of some of the irrationality in Prague. He himself had felt so displaced that he felt kind of a kindred spirit within Kafka, and it was a natural choice. And so together they worked on the first translations of The Castle and then The Trial.
And that's fascinating, isn't it? This sense of somebody growing up on an island off Scotland, identifying so closely with somebody growing up in the heart of a city in Central Europe. It's a strange bridge, isn't it? This kind of isolation, this sort of inward isolation that they both felt.
Yes, it's interesting also because despite the fact that Edwin Muir was incredibly well-traveled, much better-traveled even than somebody like Kafka, he kept that sense of displacement and that sense of travel, and he saw that within Kafka's works, Kafka was very much so traveling within his own mind. And I think that was a second link that drew him to Kafka.
During the Second World War, Edwin Muir started to work with the British Council, I believe, in Edinburgh. And then at the end of the war, he was more or less immediately sent out to Prague because of the fact that he knew the city, he'd lived here in the early 20s. He must have found a very different city from the Prague that he'd known at that time over 20 years before.
Yes, I'm sure he found a city that was desperately trying to rebuild itself, and he experienced some of the last, so to speak, golden days before things changed for decades.
He describes very vividly in his autobiography the shock of the communist takeover in 1948, doesn't he?
Yes, he does, and it's interesting because then he was able to capture some of that feeling of a lack of stability, people not really knowing where they were supposed to go given the regime's new implemented rules. And he talks about that then in a poem called The Cloud.
So maybe if you could read The Cloud, which he wrote after he came back from Prague.
Yes, he wrote it in 1956, and he put it within his book called One Foot in Eden. And it was as if he had to have time to actually digest what had gone on when he was here. One late spring in Bohemia, driving to the writer's house, we lost our way in a maze of little winding roads that led to nothing but themselves, weaving a rustic web for thoughtless travelers. No house was near, nor sign or sound of life, only a checkerboard of little fields, crumpled and dry, neat squares of powdered dust. At a sudden turn, we saw a young man harrowing, hidden in dust. He seemed a prisoner walking in a moving cloud, made by himself for his own purposes. And there he grew, and was as if exalted to more than man, yet not glorified. A pillar of dust moving in dust, no more. The bushes by the roadside were encrusted with a hard sheath of dust. We looked and wondered. The dry cloud moved on with its interior image. Presently, we found a road that brought us to the writer's house. And there sat a preacher from Urania, sad land where hope each day is killed by hope. Praise the good dust, man's ultimate salvation, and cried that God was dead. As we drove back, late to the city, still our minds were teased by the brown, barren fields, the harrowing, the figure walking in its cloud, the message from Urania. This was before the change. and in our memory, cloud and message fused, image and thought condensed to a giant form that walked the earth clothed in its earthly cloud, dust made sublime in dust. And yet it seemed unreal and lonely as things not in their proper place. And thinking of the man hid in his cloud, we longed for light to break and show that his face was the face once broken in Eden. Beloved, worth without end lamented face, and not a blindfold mask on a pillar of dust.
That image of the man in the field, in the pillar of dust, it has many different levels, doesn't it? I mean, on a very literal level, you think about the sort of the wide open fields around Prague. There's also the biblical references there, and the very strange sort of paradox of the man being both, it says, as if exalted to more than a man in this pillar of dust, but also being trapped in the dust. There are many different levels, aren't there, at which you can read this?
Yes, very much so. And I think that Edwin Muir was attempting to capture the feeling of the Czechs after they had experienced World War II, then knowing that they had had the communist takeover, and they were people who were very much working the same fields that had been taken from them at that point, on collective farms or so, and they were trying to make the best of their situation, and yet they were caught up within something that they had no control over anymore. They couldn't make it rain, so to speak, in this poem, and so these people are caught within their own dust. And so it's very interesting when he says that they think of the man and they longed for light to break. They longed for this situation to end, for the rain to come, and for there to be clarity once again politically and for the people themselves.
I was talking there to Clarisse Cloutier. To end the story, after the communist coup in Czechoslovakia in 1948, it was not long before the British Council was forced to close down, and Edwin and Willa Muir returned to Britain after a short stay in Rome. They were to remain haunted by the memory of Prague, as the poem we've just heard, written nearly a decade later, reminds us. Edwin Muir died in England in 1959, and since then his link to this city has been all but forgotten.
You've been listening to Czech Books, presented by David Vaughan.